Welcome back to the UK. It's a wee while since you've been over. Scotland, Glasgow, memories, anything pops into your head?
A few fights in the crowd I always remember when I remember the Scotland shows. We really liked playing Scotland, liked playing Glasgow. Glasgow's a beautiful city. We haven't toured over here in a while with our own tour. The last time we were here was festival shows, but we went to Ireland for the first time, which was on that tour, which was fun. But I think in the fall we'll be back, which would be great.
Of course, there were some tour dates cancelled a year or so back. Can you remember what that was all about?
Yeah, it was the Super Unknown Tour, and it was the first time we used to play like 7 days a week, you know, on headlining tours, and we'd do like an hour and a half or an hour and 15 minutes, we came out with Super Unknown, and we were still doing like 5 days a week or 6 days a week, and we were playing two-hour plus sets, and we didn't have any breaks. And the last tour we were going to do was here, and we got to the end of the U.S. tour, and we had like 4 days off. We were going to come over here, and my voice just basically crapped out. I just couldn't sing anymore, which was the first time that had ever really happened to me. Due to fatigue, like vocal fatigue. I've had to cancel before, but it was usually because I had strep throat or was sick or something, so that was pretty disappointing. And then kind of bad because we didn't come over, and then that was the end of our tour, and so then it wasn't for almost a year, I think, until we played again, so I was kind of down on myself about that. But the next tour after that was good, so...
Super Unknown did what, about 5 million copies, which was easily your most successful album to date.
Yeah.
How much extra pressure has that put on you for writing for this new album?
Well, the sales really has nothing to do with it. You know, if we were a band where we signed a deal and we put out two or three records and the records weren't selling. We were a band, you know, that's always been left alone entirely. And I guess looking at it realistically, if we hadn't started selling a lot of records, at some point somebody might say, well, this isn't working, and now, you know, maybe we want to tell you what to do or how to change what you're doing to try to, like, sell records. Because ultimately, no matter what, record company's main objective is to sell records. And so that never happened to us because every record we put out did better than the last one. But I think in terms of pressure, that sort of actually alleviates a lot of the pressure in terms of worrying about somebody else having anything to say about what you do. You know, the record company doesn't really understand how we do what we do, and they know better than to try to tell us, because they know we know more than anyone else how to make a Soundgarden record. So in that way, that, you know, there's less pressure. But as far as just looking at it musically and looking at it as an album that I guess, you know, was very different than anything we had done, it was a big step for us to do some of that stuff stylistically. It was just different than I think the normal riff rock that people had expected from us. And you know, every time we make an album, it's a challenge, and we feel pressure that, you know, that we put on ourselves to, not necessarily to outdo an album or try to beat ourselves, but to try to make something that feels new and fresh and inspired that we're into and that we're inspired by, because that's what it's about, really. You know, I think if we couldn't get to that point of being inspired, you know, every time we make an album, then it would be time to stop. So, you know, the pressure comes from us.
When you read your publishing credits for Soundgarden, most publishing companies are corporate companies like Warner Chappell or right. EMI, but for Soundgarden it's "You make me sick, I make music." Right. Is that a sense of humor there?
Yes, you picked up on that. Well, like when we were first going to sign, we had a... You know, you have publishing companies coming after you and trying to get you to do a publishing deal, and that's basically based on the fact that bands when they were first starting out are broke and they need a tour and or you know and they need to support themselves, so they'll take a publishing advance and sell a certain amount of publishing rights away, and then it's sort of either a co-publishing deal or it's someone else's publishing company. But we'd all had jobs for years, and we made enough money just touring on independent albums and owning our own merchandising and all that, that we didn't need that, so we kept our own publishing, which is a great thing. You know, I'd advise anybody out there if they're serious about playing music and selling records and being a band, keep everything that you can, you know, keep ownership of everything that you can. And so once we knew we were going to own our own publishing companies, you know, then you just get to name it. So it's just like naming a song to me. Something funny or creative or whatever. Kim's, I like it. Kim's is In One Ear, Out Your Mother Publishing. I think Kim and I got into a contest to try to come up with the most ridiculous publishing titles, but the part I like the best is like when people have done my songs, like Alice Cooper and other bands that have done one of my songs, they have to put that name on their record. That's fun to read.
It's nice to hear you that you come away with something for a laugh.
Sure. I mean, I think sometimes there's been different things we've done on records that have shown that at some point we have a sense of humor and we don't take ourselves too seriously. I think the first year we were a band, I think we started talking about that because we had written a bunch of music. I don't think any of it's been released, but it was very serious thematically. And I remember the discussion. It was when Hero was still in the band and we started realizing that, you know, some of our favorite bands, you know, one of them was like the Butthole Surfers, and we liked all these bands that were kind of had an element of humor, and we started feeling self-conscious that we were taking ourselves too seriously, and we loosened up a lot that way. But I think some of the jokes and some of the humor we've had on records has sort of been inside to the degree that people didn't quite get it. People didn't quite get Big Dumb Sex, the humor aspect of it. A lot of the collegiate American fans thought of Big Dumb Sex as just another sexist rock song and liked it because of that, you know, and they didn't get the joke that it was basically just making fun of those types of songs. And I think some people got it when we covered John Lennon's version of 1 Minute of Silence. That I think people understood that was a joke,